This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Pop quiz. What is the longest coastline in the continental United States? If you said the Pacific Coast or the Atlantic Coast, you would be mistaken. The Great Lakes, taken together, are longer than the East and West Coasts combined. Lake Michigan alone has 1,640 miles of shoreline, and it's a magnet for the many people who visit its beaches and coastal towns, and for the lucky few wealthy enough to build homes there. It's also, however, in trouble. This year, Lake Michigan has been near a record high level, flooding beaches, swamping lakefront trails, and endangering buildings along the sandy shoreline. But people around the lake are not letting it go quietly, and both individual homeowners and governments at all levels are taking on projects, big and small, to try to hold back the waters. Joining me to talk more about this are Jack Cox, a coastal engineer with Edgewater Resources. He's consulted on the science of lakeshore projects, including at Illinois Beach State Park. Jack, welcome to the 21st. Also with me is Steve Brown, chief scientist with the Illinois State Geological Survey. He's also part of the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Steve, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
And Jim Brown is with us as well, park manager at Ludington State Park in Michigan. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the 21st.
Hello, Brian.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. If you have fond memories of the Lake Michigan shore, perhaps you grew up visiting the dunes in Indiana, as I did, a 10-mile Boy Scout hike there every year, we'd love to hear about it. Join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st show. And I'm sorry, Jim Galley, I think I said your name incorrectly in the introduction there. My apologies for that. Why don't I begin with you and ask you to tell us a bit about Ludington State Park in Michigan and how the coastline has changed there.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Ludington State Park is located about 3 hours north of the Indiana Michigan border.
Hello.
We've got 7 miles of shoreline on Lake Michigan, and we're a coastal dune park. A lot of open dunes, about 5,000 acres of open dunes and forested dunes. We're one of the more popular camping destinations in the state of Michigan.
And I read in a Chicago Tribune story by Patrick O'Connell that a picnic table from Wisconsin actually emerged as the coastline has been pounded by the, can you tell me about what is happening to the shoreline there?
Yeah. So, with the rise in the lake levels, we've seen nearly a 4-foot increase in the Lake Michigan water level since the historic lows in January of 2013. And, when we have those lower lake levels, the shoreline, the way that the dynamics of the shoreline work, there'll be a large dune that kind of builds up close to the shoreline just at the back of the beach. And we call that the foredune. That foredune during the lower water levels had built up to about 20 feet. And, as debris moves around Lake Michigan, it washes up on shore and gets buried by that foredune. And now that the lake levels are so much higher, wave action is actually eating into that foredune and exposing a lot of these treasures that, have come across the lake. And, recently we did find a Milwaukee picnic table from their Parks Department.
Fascinating. Steve Brown, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You're the chief scientist at the Illinois State Geological Survey. Can you talk about what is happening elsewhere, right? So that we heard about dunes are getting sort of washed away, exposing quote-unquote treasures deposited there over the years. What is happening to other parts of the shore around Lake Michigan, particularly in Chicago and the Illinois coast?
Yeah, thank you for having me on the program. In preface to that, I just like to mention that the high lake levels aren't something that's unusual. Over our, many decade history of measuring the lake levels in the Great Lakes, there have been other times where they've been high and other times where they've been low. And it's a bit of a cycle, not quite, a repeated cycle that you could say it happens every 10 or 15 years, but it does happen. And that last happened in the next last high, the record high that we haven't quite beat was in 1986. And if you were to go back and look at the newspaper articles from that era, you'd see a lot of parallels to the Chicago Tribune article that was recently referenced. And so during high periods of lake level, then the lake is going to do what it wants to do. And and there's a lot of energy and waves, and you'll have erosion in some places, and in other places the erosion material that gets eroded can actually add new land. And one of the dynamics about shorelines is that they want to be straight, and so when we put structures and create obstructions for what the wave energy in the lake wants to do, then that can increase erosion in some areas and cause sediment to be deposited in other areas. And the other thing that happens here is that not all the shoreline is the same. There's different elevations that might be impacted differently in different geological materials. Some material like is solid rock and isn't eroded very easily. In other places, there's loose sand that moves away very quickly.
Interesting. Well, we also have with us now Jack Cox. We had a little technical issue there earlier, but he is a coastal engineer with Edgewater Resources. And we were just hearing about some of the things that people do to try and control the shoreline. And Jack, I understand that Illinois is now experimenting with building offshore reefs. Can you talk about that? What is that supposed to do, and how does that work?
Yeah, well, as you know, Illinois actually has the smallest amount of coastline of any state bordering the Great Lakes, but it certainly has some of the highest interest because much of its shoreline is either heavily urbanized already with small parcels of still remnant ancient shoreline that we'd like to preserve. And I'm going to be talking particularly about a location at the Illinois-Wisconsin border called Illinois Beach State Park. This is a relic coastal wetland. It's highly productive in terms of its ecological value, and the goal there to preserve it in its natural state as well as keep it as a resource for the people of Illinois is to try to come up with solutions that don't involve placing structures on the land. So what the goal is that whatever you do, you want to try to modify these waves and these storm events that everyone's been talking about in such a way that by the time they get to the shoreline, they are either benign enough that they cease to actually be erosive or highly erosive, or maybe if you're really good at what you do, you can kind of make some places be less erosive and self-healing. What particularly the state of Illinois Department of Natural Resources is doing is funding applied research, taking it to the actual execution level of creating submerged reefs, underwater reefs, low crested breakwaters, and physical structures that are as invisible as they can be to the shoreline, yet be very visible to a wave, if you can kind of picture that image, so that it changes the form of the wave and it changes the form of the way wave hits the shoreline and causes erosion.
Can you talk, Jack, how this differs from what's been standard practice for keeping up coastlines in the past, such as bringing in sand, you know, by the dump truck load, or maybe creating riprap, which is essentially a bunch of rocks?
Well, it's interesting. Having been in the business now for almost five decades, I have watched the evolution of coastal engineering go through the decades. And literally, there are different schools of thought on what's the right way to do it about every 10 years or so. If we think back into the early 50s, 60s, and entering the 70s, it's pretty much standard that you would build a wall at the shoreline to stop erosion. Now, a lot of that was actually triggered by events even 50 years before that, where the railroads would run their rail lines along the coastline because that was nice flat land, and they would just build up walls to keep the lake out. That kind of moved forward to people owning their property, wanting to protect it, and you would build what's called a revetment, which is a rock placed on a slope, and you keep playing with the rocks until they're big enough that they don't move anymore. Those are very unfriendly in terms of granting you access to the shoreline if people want to get down to the water. And they also end up functioning in a way that once you stop erosion, you also stop giving Mother Nature her food. Mother Nature, in making waves, actually needs to keep eating up a little bit of sand or sediment from along the shoreline to feed it. So if you build a wall someplace, you've starved Mother Nature of that, and that actually can cause worse erosion someplace else. So we went from this early generation one kind of shore protection of just looking at individual spots to generation two, where the pendulum has swung all the way to the other side and said, anything that you build on the shoreline is bad. We're going to do a soft solution, and we are going to just keep dumping sand back on the shoreline to make it be natural. That in philosophy is a tremendous solution, mm-hmm. but there's always the unintended consequences. The unintended consequences of that are that this is something you have to do into perpetuity, and for whatever reason, people don't seem to have enough money to spend things into perpetuity. You also have to understand that you are maybe depleting sand resources from mines that you're bringing inshore, and you have consequences of hauling thousands of truckloads through a city or a community or whatever to dump the sand back on the beach. So there are always these unintended consequences, but it's nice as long as you can maintain it, but it's kind of an unsustainable sort of solution. So sure. We go into generation three, where now we're looking at maybe we can mix the two. Maybe we can be smart and put sand in certain places, but then put in a few strategic rocks or rock kinds of structures or islands or whatever, with the idea that you can kind of hold a sand beach in a certain area. And if you're real smart about what you do, you stabilize the shoreline with a minimum amount of structure, but you allow a beach to just kind of dynamically stay within it. And now finally, here we are 40 years later, and we have come to the understanding that if we really know what we're doing, we can be careful about what these structures look like and how we orient them and how they're shaped. And literally, sometimes you can make sand goes backwards. You can make sure. It move against the waves. You can bend it in many places. So you actually work with nature instead of trying to resist nature. You understand what's going on. And in the latest iteration of that, we're now taking these structures and saying, hey, these are things that aqueous aquatic species, plants like to...
Right, bringing back the wildlife a little bit. Jim, let me bring you back into the conversation. We need to take a break in about a minute here, but can you briefly let us know some of the changes that you would like to see happen and that are underway to try and preserve Ludington State Park's beaches?
Well, I think some of the things that we're going to do is just have to look at, you know, where we're building structures in the future. We may have to abandon some areas or relocate, you know, and one of the examples that we have is at a park just north of us at Orchard Beach State Park. It's about 30 miles north. There's been some severe erosion issues on the park is built up on clay bluffs about, you know, 100 feet above Lake Michigan. Historic structure built by the Civilian Conservation Corps was built fairly close to that shoreline, and now is being threatened. And so instead of, you know, armoring the shoreline there and trying to fight that battle against, you know, the erosion, the decision was made to actually lift that structure up and move it a quarter of a mile away from the shoreline to preserve the structure and also, you know, get away from armoring that shoreline. So
yeah, as the Tribune reported, inspired apparently by something somebody at the park had seen on This Old House, where they moved a house on PBS. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break and then more on this briefly. And then we will be talking about sweet potato pie at the holidays coming up here on the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking now about erosion along the Great Lakes, particularly Lake Michigan, and some of the things that are being done to try and prevent that. I'm joined by Jack Cox, who's a coastal engineer with Edgewater Resources and a scientific consultant on some lakeshore projects, including one at Illinois Beach State Park. Also, Jim Galley, park manager at Ludington State Park in Michigan, and Steve Brown, chief scientist with the Illinois State Geological Survey. And we only have a couple of minutes left before we need to wrap this conversation. But Steve, I want to come back to you because you talked about lake levels and the high lake levels that have been getting a lot of media attention for the last year or so are cyclical, right? It's not a definite pattern and you can't measure it like the tides, but it is something that happens over the decades. I wonder, though, is climate change a concern for Lake Michigan's future and the shoreline of Lake Michigan in particular?
Certainly. Climate change is something that's observable and measurable. And And the annual records that we have show that there are some changes taking place in that regard. So that could have some effects on storms. We don't know what the effect will be on lake levels. The Great Lakes themselves is a very big watershed that accepts water from a very large surface area. So if there are seasonal increases in precipitation, that could have an effect in not only the amount, but also the time period over which that occurs. Also, whether or not the lakes freeze in the winter has an impact. If the lakes freeze over, there's less evaporation during the winter time. But also the converse of that is that the lake ice, when it freezes, it can also protect our shoreline during the winter when we do see an increase seasonally in storms.
Wow, so sort of a mystery as to how that's going to be affected, right? It could be more evaporation leads to lower lake levels. It could be the freezing and additional rainfall leads to
higher. Yeah, there's a lot of climate and weather variables that go into that, and they all happen. You know, they're independent variables that together result in how the lake level behaves in terms of its level.
Last thing I want to ask you, Steve, is there an end to this story, right? We've heard about these engineering attempts along the shore, and we've heard about, you know, people moving structures away from the water or shoring up the shoreline. Is there an end, or is this an eternal back and forth, humans working at the control of nature?
So I would say, you know, it is an eternal back and forth. In the past, when we've had a high lake level, the lake hasn't stayed there for very long, and it's come down off that level, high lake level. During the last period of low from 2000 to 2013, we kind of got used to low lake levels, and the lake level was lower than the past 100 years of history that we have on this information showed us. And so maybe we got comfortable over a period of 10 or 15 years with a lower than average lake level. And then since 2013, it's actually come up fairly quickly, maybe a little more rapidly than in the past. But I also want to add just to what, you know, Jim Cox here was saying with the project at Illinois Beach State Park, one of the things we're going to be doing is monitoring those activities. So we use drones to watch how the shoreline changes. We use from boats, lake bottom videography, and sonar and other methods. And we're going to watch how this changes, how these new innovative techniques impact and mitigate this shoreline erosion. And we're going to look at how storms impact this and put it all together and maybe for the first time learn something about these structures that we make and really what is the cause and effect and their effectiveness.
All right. And it's something we will continue to also watch here at the 21st. I want to thank Steve Brown, chief scientist at the Illinois State Geological Survey, Jack Cox, who's a coastal engineer with Edgewater Resources, and Jim Galley, park manager at Ludington State Park in Michigan. Thank you all for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you very kindly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.